Everybody says we have the best athletes, but I don't think we have athletes that really have a work ethic. Here's somebody you might recognize.
We lose to Canada in the World Classic. We lose to these other. You're like, how can we lift our sport? Because the rest of the world are using training techniques. They've taken what we've done for so long, and they're applying the work ethic because they got nothing to lose.
They got nothing to lose. Luke, what's the deal? Why are American athletes getting their rear ends kicked around the world?
I think the biggest thing is we have to put in the time. I mean, when I was a kid, I got in on the tennis court before school, and then after school I put in more time, and you've got to hit more tennis balls in this case, in my sport, than everybody else. In golf, you have to hit more balls there. You have to understand that you have got to put in more time than your competitor. Now, that's in business, and that's in sport.
Dr. Jacobs, you talk about an issue of respect as well.
Well, yeah, first of all, it's good to be on with Luke, my friend. How you doing?
Very good, Doc. How's the backhand?
Oh, it's as bad as it's always been, buddy. I need your help.
The problem is, Luke, he doesn't have a butt to follow through with. We got to get that butt in there so he gets some power behind it.
Well, you know, he's got that Michael Chang complex. He's got to move a lot better.
we're not going to get into my athleticism here. All right. Respect. You know, I'll tell you what I think the issue is. And it's fun to be on with Luke. We've known each other, gosh, what, about 10, 11 years. Luke's one of the most dynamic people I've ever known, Nick, along with yourself. And, you know, Luke was a guy who beat Andre Agassi in a match. And, Luke, you told me once there's no reason you should ever be Andre Agassi, but you were working hard. You were pushing yourself. You challenged yourself all the time. And that was something about you that I really respected in your game. You pushed yourself to be the best you could be all the time. I don't know of any matches that you probably ever played as a professional where you went out halfway. You always gave it everything you could.
Well, there's a difference, though, between the actual game itself and the preparation. And that's my point, is I hear all across the board that in organized activities that many players, many great athletes are reasonably good. But on their own, the self-discipline, the kind of work ethic away from the actual match is not there, Luke.
I think you're absolutely right. Plus, I mean, there's such a huge dynamic in sport and in life. It's you put in the time and you love to compete, and then how you basically handle defeat. I mean, listen, you know, you look at Roger Federer, you know, maybe the greatest player of all time, he still lost 5 times last year. 5 times he had to walk home a loser. Now, did he just quit? Or no, he went back to the practice court and got better. That's, you know, there's the work ethic, there's the time put in, and how you handle tough situations when you're down.
And the difference is, Nick, in what Luke's saying right there, the athletes who succeed and make it to the top and stay there, they learn how to deal, they learn how to lose. They don't like to lose, they don't want to lose, but they learn how to lose, they learn what it's about, and they learn what they can get to make themselves better from that. And that's where the respect issue comes in and the work ethic comes in. Too many people quit and give up. This country, it's too easy to quit and give up. Well, you know, I can't play baseball, I'll start playing tennis. I can't play tennis, I'll start playing golf. A lot of people give up and quit because it's easier to do that than it is to really look in the mirror and work harder than everybody else.
And when I look at martial arts, I would take some karate in the off season. The years I did, I always had better years, but it wasn't to me just what I did. It was the system. It was the sense of craft. It was the sense of respect for one's body, for something bigger than one, the discipline of it, and that helped me not only physically, Luke, it helped me mentally. And that, to me, is what is lacking, is kids don't understand that the preparation and the sacrifice and the pain and all that they have to put themselves through, the pressure that they have to impose, is something that can benefit them for the rest of their lives in terms of having to deal with real pressure and real challenges in life.
Absolutely. It's the process. And when you hold the trophy at the end of the championship, and you feel so good, you don't think about, you know, that exact moment. You think about all the times when it was so difficult to get your butt out there and keep practicing. So many times when you had to get over that hump, a hump that no one thought you could, but you wanted to prove to the rest of the world and to yourself that you had the guts and the grit to get over it. It's in the journey. It's in the process. I mean, that's where the real love and the reward comes from.
You know, I work with a lot of swimmers.
Go ahead, Annie.
And swimmers who make it to the very top probably have to train as hard or harder than any other group of athletes. They're in the pool every morning. I know my youngest son, gets up every day. We get up at 4:45, and he goes to the pool and practice, just like you were saying, Luke, before school. He goes after school. He's in the water. And, you know, we sat down the other day, and we were talking about this. I said, how do you like, you know, getting up early? He goes, Dad, you know, I don't mind at all because it's going to make me better. He wants it. He's hungry. And the athletes that really make it to the very best, the very top levels, are the ones that don't look at this. And see, I think a lot of this is an attitude thing. The ones that don't make it have excuses and reasons. Oh, I don't like getting up. I can't sleep. I can't go out with my friends. The ones that make it to the top, they say, hey, as you just said, Luke, it's part of the journey. It's part of the process to get me there.
Well, there's no doubt.
Let me ask you guys, a couple weeks ago, Luke.
Off first. Once he takes the floaties off, he'll be much faster.
hey, Luke, we talked about burnout.
With you.
I'm sorry?
Luke, we talked about... Go ahead, guys. Let me break through here. We talked about burnout. The other side of it is the overscheduled child that parents are going, yeah, I want my kid to be a success. I'm going to schedule him for piano lessons. I'm going to have him in volleyball and soccer and football all at the same time. Luke, how do you find your way through the maze of motivating kids to have self-discipline, to be committed, to work hard, but also not blowing out their spirit and their joy and their passion for the game?
Understand your role. I think as a parent, you have to really understand. You see the big picture for your child, whether your son or your daughter. They're out there to have fun, and they will always direct you if you look at that. Not what they say. You watch their body language. Do they really want to play basketball? Do they really want to play piano? And they're going to sit there and show you through their body language if they really like it. Don't force something. It's one thing to give them well-rounded skills. But then, you know, when I got to about 14 or 15, it was obvious that I enjoyed the one-on-one competition of tennis. The team sports were fun, but I'll tell you one thing. When a teammate blew it for me or a coach was all over me when, you know, it was somebody else's responsibility to get the practice on time and all those, that really bothered me. But in tennis, I had control. I was the man at the wheel. I think the parent needs to understand, don't live with the wins and losses. See where your kid is going to be in 4 and 5 years, getting that college scholarship, and really seeing what they love, not what you want them to love.
And that's it. And you know, Nick, that's right, a good point, because the key thing is, what do the kids want to do? You know, we've talked about this in this show so many times. When the parents get too overly involved and start pushing and pushing beyond the point where the kids are having any fun, it's just counterproductive. And that's where you really have to have a good, we always talk about the coach-athlete-parent triangle. There needs to be an equilateral triangle. Everybody has to stand what's going on. And if something's not working out right, let's say the young man isn't playing well, or his ground strokes aren't going too well. Well, the coach needs to talk to him about that. The parents need to understand that, but the parents can't push him if the kid doesn't want to get better. It has to come from within.
Okay, so let's talk about the role models out there that make it easier for us to follow. When you're out there in Australia today, what are the best relationships between the parent-coach-athlete triangle, Luke, that you see?
Well, I think right now one player at the top of the American game is James Blake. James Blake, who's had to go through so much tragedy, broke his neck in a freak practice accident. His father died. He suffered from shingles. And then he's come back to have the best year ever in 2006. His mom is right there supporting him. But, you know, she's not one of these tennis parents. She's not on every single court. You know, she's just the parent. The parent is the life coach. The tennis coach is the tennis coach, you know, talking about you may be the friend and all these things, but, you know, everybody has their role. The player is there to compete, and if you have all the people in place to support that athlete, to support that kid and their passion, you know, some kids just want to play tennis, and I'm saying if they just want to play tennis, let them play. If they want to do other things, that's fine too. I was very fortunate being a family with another brother and with a brother and two sisters. All we want to do is play tennis and travel. That was great, and our parents allowed us to do that.
Okay, Andy, so let's talk about the steps that parents can take to finding a medium between pushing their kids but also allowing their kids to take within themselves at the appropriate age their own self-discipline, their own character-building commitment.
Well, I think a lot of it really comes back to the communication skills that you as a parent have and the ownership you let your child have with the sport. I had a young lady a few years ago who was going to be a high school senior, and her mom came in with her, and she was a tennis player. And the mom called me and said, well, we're having problems. We can't play well. We're losing close matches. And it was we. And this young lady came with the mom, and the young lady was distraught because it ends up, she goes, my mom won't let me win or lose on my own. Everything is about her. And we had a session where I confronted the mother. I said, look, your daughter wants to take ownership. You need to let go. The mom wouldn't let go. And the girl had a lot of problems because of that, and she ended up quitting because she couldn't take it anymore. There needs to be a point where you as a parent have to let your child go. And usually, to me, that's, you know, Luke mentioned 14. 13, 14 is really about the time where if your child's going to want to succeed and become good, they have to want to do it by then. If you're pushing them, you know, pushing them at 8 or 9 is one thing. Pushing them at 12, 13, or 14 is different. And I think that's the age where really the ownership has to come from the young man or woman.
We had an interview with Dr. Alvin Rosenfeld about the overscheduled child a couple weeks ago. And here's an interesting comment from that.
Not about consistent messages or about a dictatorship. What it is, it is about a sense in yourself of what you truly believe in, what you think is right, what makes a difference, and acting accordingly. Because it's like the notion of, in other words, discipline. We all hear we want our kids to have some discipline. Well, discipline comes from disciples, and the disciples wanted to emulate Christ. Why? Not because they were afraid of him, not because they wanted him to just be proud of them, but because they felt that he stood for a life and a way of being and a way of conducting oneself that was the right way to live.
Isn't this more about discipline? When you look at Andre Agassi and the journey, I remember doing an exhibition against him in 87. He was that kind of a punk, long-haired, you know, beautiful guy who had all the skills but had none of the maturity. And today he is a completely transformed human being, Luke.
Yeah, and it really came down to a couple of key people. Brad Gilbert, who sat with him one moment after a loss in Washington, D.C., in the guts of that stadium in the locker room, and he said, listen, if you are going to play this way and train this way and eat this way and prepare this way, just quit. Because you're too good, you know, just to put it in halfway. If you want to look at the back end of your career and say, you know what, I'm going to maximize my opportunity both on the practice court and just see how good I can be. Really push it to the next level. And what do you got to lose? Who cares about what anybody says? Who cares about the press and who cares about the critics? And so he changed his life on that one conversation. He got into the gym. He ate better. He maximized his opportunity. And I'll tell you one thing. No one has had more of a 180 than Andre Agassi in life, and he's a huge inspiration.
When we come back, let's finish this discussion with Dr. Andrew Jacobs and Luke Jetson, the most passionate guy I know. In a good way. Let's talk about Serena Williams, a woman who's coming back from a knee injury, who's 20 pounds overweight, who could argue that she's burned out. She's been pushed by her dad. She's been pushed by a competition that wasn't always healthy with her sister. And what this moment of truth means for Serena Williams down under, whether she can turn it around and become the great, maybe the world's greatest woman tennis player once again. When we come back on Head Games on Sports Byline and Sirius Channel 122.